This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. For anyone who's had childhood dreams of becoming a treasure hunter, there's a way to fulfill that fantasy and make the world a little better. It's called geocaching, a game that's the world's largest treasure hunt with more than 3 million physical caches hidden across the world. And that world, of course, includes St. Louis. In fact, there's a park and grab cache on the campus of St. Louis University, just a stone's throw from us here at St. Louis Public Radio. And sitting right across from me now are two members of a local group dedicated to playing this game any time of year. John Lehman is the vice president of the St. Louis Area Geocaching Association, and Nan Dabler is that organization's treasurer. Nan and John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's get a definition here. What is a cache, John?
A geocache is a physical container that somebody has placed out in the wild, and they post the coordinates to that on a cache page on geocaching.com, and then people can use those coordinates through an app on your cell phone or sometimes a dedicated GPS unit to go find that cache. And inside every physical cache, there's a logbook that you can sign your name on to prove that you found that cache.
Mm-hmm. A logbook, then they must be pretty large, no?
It depends. Oh. Sizes can, they have several different sizes, all the way from what they call micros up through larges. The micros sometimes are as small as the end of your little finger.
Oh, okay.
They're little magnetic containers that have a very small log in them.
Mm-hmm.
But traditionally, they were bigger and further out in the. A lot of times they were on hikes out in the woods, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Nan, where did geocaching originate? You know, how did it begin?
Geocaching started back in May of 2000 when the public was given access to the satellites, and someone decided that they were going to hide a container out in the woods, give the coordinates to his friends who also were interested in global positioning system and the fact that they could use coordinates to find it, and then waited for someone to actually go out there and report that they had found it. It was Dave Ulmer was the one who put out the first original stash, as we called it back then.
When did you first do your geocaching? How did you get your start, Nan? And was it here in St. Louis?
It was here in St. Louis. A good friend of mine works with the Girl Scouts in the area, and at a summer camp that my children and I were attending, she was teaching the other Girl Scouts about geocaching. I kind of eavesdropped, but it was another 2 years before I actually got a GPS unit and went with my daughters to look for our first geocaches in Kirkwood.
Mm-hmm. What did you find there? Do you remember?
I do. The very first one that we ever found was a peanut butter jar under the steps of a retail establishment in downtown Kirkwood.
Is that retail establishment still around?
It has changed to another retail store, but
okay.
Yes, it is still there. The geocache is not.
No, okay. Peanut butter, I wonder if there was another kind of animal that got to it. John, how about you? Did the St. Louis area, was this the host to your first geocaching experience?
Yes. I don't know if everybody remembers, back on the 250th anniversary of St. Louis, they put out the cake series,
right,
where they
right.
had the artist decorated local cakes at different places. That was in 2014, and my wife and I actually went around and found all 250 of those cakes, and there was an app on your phone to do that. And after that was finished the next year, we said, well, what are we going to do now to go out and see the area? And I had seen geocaching at a retreat. They had showed us how to use a handheld GPS, and I signed up for an account, and I got involved in geocaching then back in 2015.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to invite you to the conversation. Is geocaching one of your ways to explore the outdoors? What is your favorite way to explore outside? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also email us at talk@stlpr.org. So you'd mentioned earlier a GPS unit, John?
Yes.
What does that look like?
It looks similar to a very bulky cell phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a small, bulky cell phone.
Is that what you use?
I use those still when I'm going out into the woods or on a hike where cell service may not be as good. But typically these days, I'd say 99% of the people use an app on their cell phone because it's so much more convenient. Everybody's already got a cell phone available, so they don't have to go out and buy a special unit.
So it's relatively low cost then. It doesn't yes. take too much. And I think for those who have families, that is very attractive, not having to pay, you know, admission or that sort of thing in order to go out and have some fun looking for something. John, you had mentioned the logbook.
Mm-hmm.
Nan, for you, in all of the geocaching you've done, has there been really interesting information that you've seen in a logbook? Does it include, you know, where people are from or anything of that sort?
The logbook or log sheet, some of them are just a strip of paper. It's simply there to verify that you actually were at that geocache. And we all have geocaching nicknames. That's what we sign when we put our name on the log. But occasionally, if it's a really large geocache container, there will be more of a memo size book or even a larger spiral notebook type logbook. And occasionally, a geocache owner will ask for more detailed information about your find, but that's really rare.
Okay.
Most of the time, it's sign your name and get moving.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen anything remarkable or notable?
Yeah, occasionally. As back in the older days, when geocaching was first getting started, like I said, a lot of them were like ammo cans or large containers out in the woods, and they would have a larger book in there. And I have seen some of the old geocaches with an old logbook where you could look back, and people did write more stories and things in them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been fun. And
it's really interesting.
Yeah. These days, when you find a cache, not only do you sign the log, but you go and log it online. And so you can write up a description there of how you found it, what you were doing that day, something interesting to tell the cache owner.
Mm-hmm.
So most of that is done online these days rather than on the physical log. As Nan said, most of the physical logs are just your caching signature.
And then you get out of there.
Yep. On to the next one.
So geocaching, we're talking about the seeking part, but there is also a placing part. Is that right?
Yes.
Nan, have you ever done that? Have you cached something? Tell us
about
it.
I have a geocache in my front yard.
Oh, you do?
I've had one there. This is the third one, actually, and I've had one there since my daughter put the first one out in our lamppost in the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fun because when somebody comes to find it and I happen to be home, I'll go outside and actually meet and speak with them, and I learn and who they are and make a new friend.
Mm-hmm. Are there any concerns that are related to having a cache on private property at all, John?
Yes. Yes. Every geocache that's going to be published on geocaching.com goes through a review process. And there's guidelines about where you can hide a cache. And anything on private property, you need to get landowner permission to place that cache there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're putting it on private property, yes, you have to get permission. Now, one of the things that SLAGA has done over the years is worked with some of the landowners, like the St. Louis County Park System. So we actually have blanket permission to place caches in St. Louis County parks as long as we follow certain guidelines.
Okay.
But there are also, there's volunteer reviewers that actually review each of the cache pages before they publish to make sure that they're meeting the guidelines and they're not next to a playground or they're not too close to another cache.
Mm-hmm.
All caches have to be at least 528 feet apart.
Oh, I see.
So you can't stack physical caches on top of each other.
Now, you've mentioned SLAGA, which is the St. Louis Area Geocaching Association, and I understand that it was among the first to be established in the United States, and it has a very localized focus. Who is the more senior insofar as membership with the group, John or Nan?
I don't know. I joined in 2009.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's before me. Yeah? That's before
okay.
I started caching.
Okay. So Nan, can you tell us about that localized component and how it guides the way you all participate in geocaching?
SLAGA, or St. Louis Area Geocachers Association, is a community of people who share the interest in geocaching. We do events locally, but we also try to, the board's job is to promote the game within the St. Louis area. And so we try to bring new opportunities to the membership. Right now we're doing a monthly challenge just to get people out and geocaching more.
And what are some of the activities that you all have done over the years?
Yeah, as for SLAGA, we actually have two picnics. We have a summer picnic and a fall picnic. And there's also we have summer, fall,
and spring. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a winter potluck that's hosted by one of the local cachers who's hosted it for years. Mm-hmm. So four times a year, we have pretty big events. And we've had Christmas events recently. The other thing we've done is, for a long time, we were part of the St. Louis, or I don't remember which organization, but it was a street cleaning, where you see the signs on the side of the road that this area is maintained by a certain organization.
Oh, right.
We had a piece of Olive Boulevard that we would go and pick up trash twice a year.
Okay. Which
along there.
Do you recall which part? I think I've seen that sign.
Yeah, it was down west of 270 before you get to 40, obviously.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Near Faust Park.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's near Faust Park. Mm-hmm.
How many caches are there in Missouri, in St. Louis?
Yeah, in Missouri, there's currently more than 10,000.
Wow.
In the state.
Okay.
And in the St. Louis County and St. Louis City region, there's about 1,800 current active caches.
Mm-hmm. Is there a contest or anything among geocachers, like who has found the most or... Nan?
There are lists online of who has found the most among all the geocachers in Missouri. Mm-hmm. I have often said I find it fascinating. There are lots and lots of statistics in baseball, but I honestly think that geocachers keep more statistics than they do in baseball. Everybody's got their own goals that they're working towards. So it's just kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
SLAGA itself does have milestone awards that we do give to members who achieve their first 100, 500, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, and 25,000
wow.
finds.
Okay. And do you actually have somebody who's found that many, 25? Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
Several.
Oh, yeah. And several. Beyond.
Okay. And I hope that these are longtime members because I'd imagine this would take some years to accomplish.
Yes, definitely.
What is the range of your membership? Do you have kids? Does it go all the way up to seniors? How does that work?
Yeah, we do. We have a wide variety. Families sometimes get involved, especially with young kids, because that gives them something to go out and do with the kids, and the kids can find things. And one of the things that in the larger caches, people will trade items in and out.
Mm.
So people leave swag in the cache, and then the kids can find a ball or something they'd like, and they can trade and add something in its place. So families, we have a lot of retired people do that. A lot of people use geocaching as a travel aid in a sense where, oh, I'm going to be going to this area. Let's look and see where the geocaches are. And typically those are at exciting places to visit, interesting
yeah.
sites or interesting artwork or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
another part of the local focus, it has to do with taking care of the environment. Nan, what is it that people will do when they're out geocaching that is a demonstration of environmental care?
So geocaching has its own etiquette, one of which is cache in, trash out. This weekend, we're having a CITO, C-I-T-O event in Bellefontaine Cemetery. We do that twice a year and pick up trash there, partly because we have a great relationship with them, and we do have several multiple stage geocaches in the cemetery. The caches are focused around the history of people who are buried there. But whenever you're out in the environment, you should, if you come across trash, we as geocachers are supposed to pick it up and take it out with us.
Mm-hmm. Is that an ethos that developed over time? Because I think anytime you're talking about humans being out somewhere, there's always the danger that they're going to leave stuff behind. Is that something that has developed since geocaching got started, this element of caring for the places that you've left?
I'm not sure when it, you know, actually got started. But as I said, most of the early caches were out in the woods. They were hikes. So there was obviously a connection to being outdoors. And we like to keep the game board clean. So we like to clean up the earth as we're... As we're going along.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of games... there are different types of caches, I understand, and difficulty ratings. How does that work, Nan?
The difficulty and terrain ratings go from 1 to 5. Terrain of a 1 should be wheelchair accessible, all the way up to a 5, which usually means that you need special equipment. As far as the difficulty of the hide being a 1, it's a pretty obvious here it is. The one on the tree in my front yard is pretty much a 1. Mm-hmm. Because it definitely doesn't look like it belongs there. It's to people that play geocaching, they know, oh, that's got to be it. Up to a 5, which could be a gadget cache that requires some real thinking skills in order to figure out how to get to that log sheet inside.
And there is one that I heard about called the Architect.
Oh, yes, the Architect. Yes, there's... There's a cacher in St. Louis that's placed a lot of different inventive caches, and the Architect is a multi-stage cache that has a whole story behind it related to the chalice coming over to the United States and being hidden by some people, and you're going to help find it. But as a part of going to the different stages, many of the stages are within storm tunnels, storm drains. So you have to actually go into some of these storm drains to find some information to get the next stages along the way. So he's got a whole story behind it. It's like a small book. In fact, you start at a library by going to find a book that he's placed in the library with their permission, obviously, and reading a story and solving some puzzles to get to the next stage. And it's a very big... very big endeavor to try and get it all. Usually we do those as a group. That's the other thing in geocaching. A lot of times it's a social activity where we get people together to go caching. We have events frequently that people attend. There's probably one or two events every week at least in the St. Louis area. But yeah, the Architect it's a mammoth endeavor. Some of those, I didn't realize some of those storm drains are like 15, 20 feet tall, and they're huge, so you can just... You could drive a Mack truck into some of the storm drains that I hadn't ever seen before until we did the Architect.
Mm-hmm. And as we close here, Nan, when is the next event that you all will be doing?
Well, there is the Cash In, Trash Out on Saturday.
On Saturday.
In Bellefontaine.
And what time does it start?
9:00.
Do we need to sign up for that, or should people just show up?
People could just show up.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Which part of the cemetery? It's quite large, isn't it?
You come in the main entrance. That's usually where we gather.
Okay, great. Yeah. Nan Dabler is the St. Louis Area Geocaching Association's treasurer, and John Lehman is the vice president of that organization. Thank you both for joining us today, and have fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.